Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and the king's seed and the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well-favored and skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding science, as such as had ability in them to stand in king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of Chaldean. And the king appointed them a daily provision of king's meat and the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of eunuchs gave names, for he gave them Daniel, the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Mishael and Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who had appointed you meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let us countenance be looked upon before thee, and the countenances of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servant. So he consented to them in this matter and proved them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that king had said he should bring them in, then a prince of eunuchs, brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. The king communed with them, and among them was all found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. The Lord will bless the reading of his words.
So today we come to the very first chapter of the book of Daniel. Last week we looked at some of the background to this book, but chapter 1 concentrates upon Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, and also upon the Lord and upon Daniel and his friends. Very interested in verse number 1. We're told exactly the purpose of Nebuchadnezzar. He actually came in the third year of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and besieged Jerusalem. It was his purpose to take now the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem away to Babylon and that into captivity. Remember last week we said there were two reasons why God allowed this. First of all, because of the evil of the elders of the nation, and secondly, because of their failure to give the land its Sabbath. But now the time has come in divine purpose, and Nebuchadnezzar comes upon the scene and he besieges Jerusalem. His intention is to take all the inhabitants of Jerusalem and Judah to become captives in Babylon. Ready to turn and come to verse 2. Because in verse 2, we now get the keys of the book. It says, and the Lord gave Jehoiakim into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. In other words, Nebuchadnezzar's conquest of Judah and Jerusalem was not of his own making, not of his own military might. Because verse 2 tells us the Lord gave Jehoiakim into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, indicating to us in verse number 2 that this book is going to be an unfolding of the sovereign purposes of God in relation to his people Israel, and therefore take us into the areas of prophecy that will take us right on to the very end times. And so we find then in verses 1 and 2 how that we have introduced to us Nebuchadnezzar and the Lord fulfilling his purpose in relation to this particular people of Judah and Jerusalem. But when we come to verses 3, 4 and 5, we now learn the purpose of Nebuchadnezzar with regard to the captives that he brought. Having brought them down to Babylon, we now would have them to be taught, in verse number 4, that they might teach them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So what the king did first of all, having brought the captives to Babylon and selecting the best of them, those of king's seed, the nobility and the intellectuals, having brought them down, it was with this purpose that they might be taught the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Satan never changed his plans, really. For he used Nebuchadnezzar in this way to try and move out of their whole impersonal interest the things they'd learned in Jerusalem. For Daniel and his friends, they would have been about 16 at this point in time. And all that they'd learned in Jerusalem of God and the worship of God and of the will of God, we find that Nebuchadnezzar would seek to have that removed out of their thinking, that they must now be taught the learning and the language of the Chaldeans. And Satan has not changed his ways at all, because you see, the world is a very ungodly place. And when we read through the Old Testament, we're given sort of three pictures, different pictures of the world that Satan uses in relation to the people of God, to move us out from our devotion and fidelity unto the Lord. We read, of course, of the Egyptian world, and that, of course, is marked by its pleasure. And then we read of the Sodom world, that's marked by its immorality. But when we come to the Babylonian world, that's marked by its religion. And so we find that the king now puts his mind to ridding these young men of all that they'd learned in Jerusalem. And how will he do it? Well, of course, he will provide them with education in Babylon that will span a period of 3 years. And in that three-year period in the University of Babylon, if you will, he hoped to have actually, you know, moved the mind of these four young fellows away from what they learned in Jerusalem now to the learning and the language of the Chaldeans. It's amazing how Satan always seeks to do that. What we learned of God, then he will seek to move that out from our minds and our thinking. And so he sought in this particular chapter to do the same for Daniel and his friends. Notice how he went about it. First of all, he provided for their education, and they were to spend 3 years in learning. In order that they might be supplied with provisions during their 3 years of learning, he provided them meat from the king's table and the wine that the king drank. So everything was provided by the king for these young men and others that he'd taken into his control because of their nobility and their standing, that ultimately they might be able to stand before Nebuchadnezzar the king. That was his purpose. And so the first five verses of this chapter indicates to us the beginnings of the life of Daniel in particular. For he's the prophet, and his three friends, of course, were those who were faithful to God in a day of unfaithfulness. And so we find that really now, from verse 6 right through to the end of the chapter, the whole concentration is upon Daniel, his personal life and his public life. If you really go to chapter 6, of course, his prayer life. For the secret of Daniel's life, whether personal or whether public, was his prayer life. Very interesting when you're in chapter 6, for instance, when he went through to his room and knelt down upon his knees three times a day to pray unto the Lord his God, it was as he had done aforetime. So we learn that in the personal life of Daniel, prayer had a very important part and a very important place. And so we find that now they are in Babylon, and now they're being provided for by the king. We see that Daniel has to come to this conclusion. Will he use the provision of the king, or will he move according to his conscience in relation to his knowledge of the law of God? So this chapter really does revolve around this crisis in the life of Daniel. As for his personal life, we find it was a purposeful life. See, Daniel purposed in his heart not to defile himself with the king's meat. So you see, the personal life of Daniel, that actually was a life marked by prayer, was a life that was lived in devotion to God and in fidelity to the law of God. And so we find that with this crisis lay before him, Daniel had to make up his mind. Would he eat of the king's provision or would he not? And so we see that this crisis comes upon a Daniel, and it's very real. And of course, it was very, very problematic, because after all, Nebuchadnezzar, the king, whom he would he slew, whom he would he kept alive. And of course, the master of the eunuchs was feared for his life should anyone go against the will of the king. Now, when I think about that, I think about Daniel is one of four men. And the four men, of course, are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Each of those four men serve God. And yet before they served God, there was decision they had to make in relation to their personal life. For instance, when we come to Isaiah and chapter 6, what we find with Isaiah chapter 6 was this. He was the man of the cleansed lips. You remember the scene in Isaiah chapter 6? Saw the Lord sit upon the throne, and how one of the servants came with that coal from off the altar and purged his lips. And Daniel, before he entered upon his prophetic service for God, he was a man of clean lips. Then when we come to Jeremiah, when you read chapter 1, we find he was a man who felt he was not worthy to serve God. But at the end of the day, God said unto him, gird up thy loins. And so Jeremiah was a man who girded his loins in order that he might serve God. When we go to Ezekiel and Ezekiel chapter 1, We find that Ezekiel was a man who saw the glory of the Lord in the visions. In chapter 1, we find that Ezekiel was the man of the open eyes. So we have the man of the cleansed lips, the man of girded loins, and the man of the open eyes. What of Daniel? Well, of course, in this chapter we learn he's a man of controlled appetites. And if ever we're going to serve God successfully, these four things are needful. We need just to remember of clean lips, girded loins, open eyes, and controlled appetites. And so then we see Daniel, and he's faced with this crisis in relation to the food that the king had provided for all the students that were in that university to learn the language and the learning of the Chaldeans. What I like about this chapter is this. Daniel, faced with this crisis, he never did take an attitude of rebellion. He didn't refuse to eat the king's meat and set forth his principles. We see what the king had taught to do was actually to have these young men imbibe the very principles and practices of Babylon and the Chaldeans. But what Daniel did in his wisdom, against his knowledge of the law of God, he said unto Melchizedek, he said, prove thy servant 10 days. And so instead of being rebellious, he was very courteous. And if his personal life was marked by a heart that had purpose not to defile himself with the king's meat, then we learn his public life was such that he's brought into favour with the man that mattered. So we find that when this great crisis came upon Daniel and his friends, he appealed. He appealed unto the one who's responsible to provide their diet, appealed unto him. He says, prove thy servant 10 days. Because when Daniel said he would not desire to eat the king's meat, of course, the man said, well, I fear my head. If I don't give you what the king has provided, then I fear for my own head. So Daniel, in his wisdom and his courtesy, he just said, prove thy servant 10 days. That tells me that Daniel, although only 16 years of age, thereabouts, is a man who has absolute confidence in God, whom he got to know when he was born and brought up in Jerusalem. And so with every confidence in God, he said, prove thy servants 10 days. Instead of eating the king's meat and drinking of the king's wine, let us eat pulse. I take that to be a vegetarian sort of diet. And at the end of 10 days, look upon thy servants and then deal with us as thou seest fit. That's tremendous confidence in God when faced with a crisis in life, especially when the man behind that crisis was none other than Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon. And so we find in the course of life, even at this present time, we are faced with crisis from time to time. But you see, like Daniel, we need to have a confidence in God. We need to have a courtesy toward others. And we need to leave matters with God when we're faced with certain issues. Like Daniel, his was a very personal issue. And it was a dietary issue. But he had enough confidence in God to leave the matter with God. You know, you cannot live many years without coming to realize that after all, to live for the Lord in this world often brings us face to face with challenges, with a crisis perhaps. And therefore, we need to have that same confidence in God that Daniel had. And although Daniel had learned all that he knew of the Lord and of God in Jerusalem, Babylon had not succeeded and moving that out of his confidence. Instead, he had his confidence in God and left it with God. So for 10 days, It was agreed that they should have posts, whilst all the others could eat the king's meat. And it does seem, does it not, that only Daniel and his three friends actually had a conscience about this matter. The rest seemed to enjoy what the king had provided. But then at the end of the 10 days, they were to be looked upon and be dealt with according as it was found in them. So what do we see? At the end of 10 days, when they were examined, they were fairer and fatter than all the rest of those students that were at that time. And so impressed was it the master of the eunuchs, so impressed was he with this fact that they were fairer and they were fatter in flesh than all the others, that he was convinced that he could easily take away the king's meat and the king's wine and feed these students upon the vegetarian diet that Daniel suggested. And with such results that he did, he took away the king's meat from all the other students, and they all had the same diet. And so we find that Daniel in chapter 1 is being prepared for a service for God. He was a man of controlled appetites. He was a man who had a purpose of heart. He was a man who, as to his public life, he had won respect, because we find that the eunuch actually, Daniel was favoured, and he was loved with a tender love, so it says. And so we find that those among the people of God who are willing to just leave every matter with God, as these did, then we can trust God to do his will, fulfil his purpose, as far as our lives are concerned. And so we find then in the chapter, first of all, we've got the sovereignty of God seen in that he handed the king of Judah and all the inhabitants thereof over to the hand of Nebuchadnezzar to become captives in Babylon. And then we see that whilst in Babylon, they tried to teach them the learning and language of the Chaldeans, and therefore remove from them any devotion, fidelity unto God, the God which they learned of in Jerusalem. But then we find that having come to this, these men had to be examined by the king. And it seems to me, as I read through that chapter, the first thing was they had to stand before the king and they had to examine orally. The king communed with them, with all these students. He communed with them. I guess he was testing out their wisdom, their understanding. And what we find is this, that Daniel and his three friends, they were 10 times better than all the others that had gone through that period of 3 years of university learning and eating of the king's provision. These four young men, actually, they were well favoured, not only before the general public, but before the king. And the king, in questioning them, discussing with them, communing with them, found that these four young men were wiser, had greater understanding than all the others that had been through those 3 years of learning. That shows how God is faithful unto those who are faithful to him. And we see the faithfulness of God in response to the faithfulness of Daniel and his friends in not actually defiling themselves with the king's meat. Why would it defile them? Well, in Babylon, of course, whatever food was put upon the table of the king would first of all have been offered unto idols. It's all part of the idolatry of the Chaldeans. And Daniel, realizing that, he would not defile himself with food that had first of all been offered unto idols. He would not get involved in the Babylonian idolatry. And God honored that. And God, in his faithfulness to them, at the end of those 3 years, they were paid me 10 times better than all the others. Then we find that Daniel, in his personal life, purpose in his heart, not to defile himself. His public life, he was respected because of the fact that he found favor in the eyes of men. And because he obeyed God and trusted God, he was blessed by God with greater knowledge and greater understanding, so that they were actually just promoted in the palace of the king. And so we find that at the end of the chapter, Daniel and his friends, verse 20, they were then promoted by the king, given places of responsibility and places of honor, I guess. And all because here they were, faced with a crisis, but willing to trust God and defy the king and his command. But the way in which he did it is a simple lesson for us all. He was respectful. And of course, he just left it in the hands of those responsible as to what would be the outcome after those 10 days. And the outcome was this. Daniel became a responsible person within the palace. And he requested for the three young men also, his friends, that they may have places too. But then we come to the last verse, and we find that because of Daniel's handling of this crisis, we read that he continued unto the first year of King Cyrus. How interesting. Daniel's ministry, which began in Babylon at 16, it went through the Babylonian kingdom, the Medo-Persian kingdom, and then right through to the day of Cyrus, and Cyrus came into power. And so we find that Daniel's ministry was so respected and so valued. He went from one kingdom and one king to another king. And so we find that in this opening chapter, we just have set before us the man whom God is going to use to actually unfold these great purposes of God in regard to the future. Because when we get into chapter 2, we find now that the sovereignty of God is displayed not only in the origin of nations, but in their history. See, Deuteronomy chapter 32 tells us of the origin of nations. It came about in the days of Peleg, of course. And so we find that God in whom Daniel trusted, he was a God who was sovereign in the history and also the origin of nations. And as far as these young men were concerned, he was sovereign in their history and in their destiny. And so we see how that this book opens with this interesting study in the life of Daniel, a man who purposed in his heart not to defile himself. Now, there are just four very important chapters in this book. Chapter 2, chapter 7, chapter 9, and chapter 12. And by the time we consider those four very important chapters, we should have a grasp of God's purposes that takes us right on to the end of the Great Tribulation period. But for the moment, we'll leave it there and not forget the simple lessons for us to trust God in every circumstance, in every situation, knowing that God honours those that honour him. And so we look forward then as we get next week into chapter 2 and begin to move through the prophetic sections of this book, that we might know where God is going in this book as revealed to us by Daniel as he's written this book for us. Thank you.